Coming up tomorrow, Wednesday the 13th, you can head to the Stone Center on campus at 6 p.m. for another significant event in their spring 2019 schedule. It's the continuation of their writer's discussion series. And tomorrow's event will feature E. Patrick Johnson, who is a professor at Northwestern University. He's the author of a couple of books, including Sweet Tea, Black Gay Men of the South, but he'll be discussing his latest book, which is called Black Queer Southern Women. And Patrick Johnson joins us here now in the studio. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
So tell us about the book. It's called Black Queer Southern Women. It's about the life stories of more than 70 black queer women in the South. What was the inspiration? What was the impetus to launch the project?
Well, the project has been probably a little over 12 years in the making, in that when I started thinking about the oral histories for black gay men, which came about in Sweet Tea, I also was thinking about including the women, but the joke I like to tell is, with all things, the gay men just took it over. But in all seriousness, I didn't include the women at that time because I really decided to focus on the stories of men. But then over the years, as I toured with Sweet Tea, a number of women in the audiences would ask me, well, when are you going to tell our story? When are you going to start interviewing us? And I thought perhaps that someone would, another scholar, but they didn't. And so I decided in 2012 to come back down to South and start interviewing women. And for 2 years, from 2012 until 2014, I conducted 79 interviews with women from East Texas all the way up to Maryland.
Wow. And the fact that people are constantly asking the question at the book talks is just underscores how important a book project this is, that these are stories that don't get told.
Absolutely. And that was one of the reasons why I wanted to do Sweet Tea in the first place, because when you think about the South, people don't think about gay people, mm-hmm. and particularly in the African American community, they don't necessarily think about that sub community. And so I wanted to create the archive, and so Black Queer Southern Women is kind of a complement to Sweet Tea.
Mm-hmm. So you spoke with close to 80 women. How did you meet them?
Oh, that's interesting. I mean, a number of these women knew about my work from the first book, of course. And then I always tell the story that, you know, lesbians are very organized. And so it only took a couple of emails going out on a few listservs, and I was inundated with women contacting me saying that they wanted to be a part. And some of the first women I interviewed were right here in the Triangle, mm-hmm. in Raleigh, Durham, Chapel Hill, and also in the Triad in the Winston-Salem, Greensboro area. And it really was a word-of-mouth kind of thing.
Who were some of your favorites?
Oh, there's so many. One of the women I interviewed was from Winston-Salem. Her name is Michelle, and she actually comes to a lot of talks when I come to the area, and she was such a wonderful spirit, a really interesting story. I actually interviewed her in her church, where she's a very strong member there. But her story in particular is very poignant because it's a story of sexual assault, mm-hmm. which actually is the story of a lot of the women that I interviewed. I interviewed, of course, 79 women, and 66 of them talked about some form of sexual assault. And again, this was before the Me Too movement, but it just speaks to how prevalent a sexual assault and sexual trauma is among women, not just queer women, but all women. But on the flip side of her story, she's just a wonderful storyteller. Another story that I love is from the oldest woman I interviewed. She just turned 80, and she hails from Puerto Rico. And she was adamant about her blackness. She wanted to be counted as, you know, a black woman. She often says, "What do you think the slave ship stopped first?" It wasn't the States, it was in the Caribbean. Mm-hmm. But she has a fascinating story about finding her independence from her family, from her mother and father, and just wonderful stories about tricking her father into letting her stay out late, because she used to come in late all the time, and he would punish her and say, you know, as long as you're under my roof and I'm paying the rent, you're going to do what I say. And so she got a job, and she asked if she could pay the rent, and he had forgotten about what he had said earlier. So when she paid the rent the next night, she stayed out late. She came home, and he said, "What did I tell you?" And she said, "I paid the rent." So it's funny stories like that that are really amazing. And but I mean, there are, all of the stories are a lot of fun, but also compelling.
Speaking with Patrick Johnson again, he's the author of Black Queer Southern Women. He's going to be speaking at the Stone Center on campus tomorrow at 6 p.m. as part of the Writers Discussion Series. You can get more information on the series and on this event in particular online at stonecenter.unc.edu. So we're talking about the experience of African-American queer Southern women. Every individual experience, of course, is different, and everyone has a different experience of living as a Black queer Southern women, but there are going to be some overlaps. There are identities that get ascribed onto us, and people see us in that way, and we start seeing ourselves that way. So what did you learn, and what do we learn from reading the book about being a Black woman who is queer in the South in America?
It's interesting because, you know, I couldn't say that there's one thing that identifies any of these women across the board. And that was the thing that was interesting to me, except for they all identify as Black, you know, racially, they all, you know, identified that way, except the other categories, queer, Southern, and even woman, were a little more nebulous. For instance, while everyone is a Southerner, they weren't all proud of that fact. Mm-hmm. Some of them are chomping at the bit to get out. But the reason why I use queer as opposed to lesbian is because many of them didn't like the term lesbian. They preferred gay, or they preferred no identity marker at all. Mm-hmm. And then even the notion of woman, one of the people that I interviewed post the interview transitioned and is now identified as male. So those categories are all fluid, and that was kind of surprising to me when I first started the research. But unlike the men, where things were kind of defined in a particular way, with the women, their identities and even their sexual desire was much more fluid.
Mm-hmm. So we're talking about categories, and I want to ask the 101 class question just to get listeners on the same page, to talk about intersectionality, because that informs this project. Mm-hmm. And it informs society so significantly. So you don't necessarily read this book or come to the talk, but just knowing the concept is so important, just in terms of understanding how we relate to each other.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, one of my colleagues at Northwestern has just written a book on intersectionality. Yeah. Basically, the term is meant to help us understand how we are not just one thing, and that, you know, we might be a part of a racial or ethnic group, but we're also we may also be a part of a gender group. We also may be a part of a class group, so that any one of those things might be privileged in any given context. So the fact that I am gay and male might not speak to the fact that I'm working class. And so in any context, any of those things could be at play, or all of them at once. Mm-hmm. It just depends.
And it's the room that you're in and the people yes. that you're with, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. And how does that concept get affected by the recognition that the categories are themselves fluid?
Well, that's tricky because, you know, we as humans, I think we tend to think in binaries. It's, mm-hmm. you know, one thing or the other. We don't deal all that well with nuance. And so when it comes to something as tricky as sexual identity or orientation or gender identity, we really have these kind of rigid ways of thinking about that. And one of the things that I think is interesting is the Gen Z folk are helping us, pushing mm-hmm. us away from binaries, where they have had access to the world in their pocket via a computer, called an iPhone. And so their vision of the world is very different from other generations in that they've had access to the world literally, and so they don't see things in the same way that we do. And I think that they're pushing us in a new direction in terms of not seeing things in such rigid terms. And, you know, for me as a professor, one of the things that's a challenge to me is particularly pronouns. When the preferred pronoun is they, it's not that I don't want to accommodate, it's just like, in terms of being an English person, it's just hard.
It's a plural.
It's a plural. But again, I think that it's helpful for, you know, that generation to push us to think outside the box.
Yeah. What's been the reaction to the book?
It's been hugely positive. Mm-hmm. One thing is just getting the stories out. Before I started interviewing these women, a number of people said, oh, you're not going to get women to talk to you about that because you're a man. And I had some trepidation about that, but that was not the case. Women opened up to me about lots of different things, and it speaks to the fact that everybody has a story to tell, but not everybody gets to tell it. And so I feel that the book has provided a platform for these women, and they have been a part of this journey with me. In 2014, I actually did a stage reading with 5 actors at the Stone Center, and some of the women whose stories were in that stage reading were at that performance. And at the launch of the book in Atlanta, 5 of the women were there and were on a panel talking about the experience with me being a man, being interviewed about their lives, but also about the importance of getting their stories out there.
What do your readers take from the book?
There's so much to take from this book, not only about, you know, Black queer Southern women, but about humanity. I think that one of the things that the book does is dispel the myth that we're all alike. Mm-hmm. No one person is the same. And yet there are these things that connect us as humans, you know, whether that's family drama, loves and losts, and just how we try to make our way in the world.
Yeah. Speaking again with E. Patrick Johnson, author of Black Queer Southern Women, tomorrow, 6 p.m. at the Stone Center. If you want to catch his talk or get more information about the book, definitely head there. And again, stonecenter.unc.edu. Other things that we haven't mentioned, I know I always wanted to wrap up this conversation by asking about your second favorite story of all of the 79. So it's not to spoil the best one, but...
Well, one of my favorites is by Ida May from Odenville, Alabama, mm-hmm. who has a fabulous story about how she sheds her women's clothing in favor of men's clothing. Mm-hmm. It's a really funny story that she tells with a lot of wit and humor, and it's one of my favorites to share.
The book is Black Queer Southern Women. It's available now. Patrick Johnson's going to be speaking at the Stone Center on campus tomorrow at 6 o'clock in the Hitchcock Multipurpose Room, stonecenter.unc.edu. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.